Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to the sixth episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Today, in the first special episode of the series, we have with us Ellis Keith, founder of Lucid Meetings, the new rules for work labs, and the meeting innovation community.
In the research that we did, we were looking at how our location impacts how effectively we can collaborate. And in general, in labs, we look at, you know, what, given that we've got distributed work, given that we've got the rise of AI, given that we've got all kinds of new expectations about what it means to do knowledge work together, what needs to shift in the way that we assemble teams, drive business forward, and in general, make work beautifully regenerative and worth engaging in beyond the fact that we all like to eat.
Ellis Keith, founder of Lucid Meetings, the new roles for work labs, and the meeting innovation community, elevates meetings, decision-making, and team collaboration. With 20-plus years dedicated to merging research with practice, Ellis is the author of Where the Action Is, The Meetings That Make or Break Your Organization, and a frequent media guest and speaker. Renowned for making collaboration productive and enjoyable, clients describe her work as deep, golden, and surprisingly fun. Now, onto this truly insightful episode with Ellis Keith. Ellis, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I am excited to have this special conversation with you with respect to the research that you have been doing around work. So before we actually start talking about the research itself, tell a bit about what you are doing at New Rules for Work Labs and how it sort of connects back to all what all of us are doing.
Right on. Well, thank you for asking and for giving me this opportunity to share some of what we've learned. The New Rules for Work Labs project is really focused on how work is changing, and specifically how do we collaborate effectively. So in the research that we did, we were looking at how our location impacts how effectively we can collaborate. And in general, in labs, we look at, you know, what, given that we've got distributed work, given that we've got the rise of AI, given that we've got all kinds of new expectations about what it means to do knowledge work together, what needs to shift in the way that we assemble teams, drive business forward, and in general, make work beautifully regenerative and worth engaging in beyond the fact that we all like to eat. So,
right, and this is about doing research or imagining the new work. How does that sort of blend in your work?
Yeah, so in the labs project, we're doing a bit of both. So we began and kicked off with a research project that was inspired by some research that we found in the academic community. My background, I'm a collaboration designer and business meeting expert. I run a meeting innovation community focused on, you know, how is tech changing meetings? How is facilitation changing meetings? And the academic community has a very, very different perspective on how they look at effective communication and interaction. So some research came out and we said, you know, the way academia looks at the business world and looks at how we interact is so constrained by the requirements that are placed on them in terms of volume, in terms of, you know, review boards and whatnot, that they often end up studying these tiny kind of weird isolated scenarios that don't look like anything we'd actually do in the real world.
Right.
So we began that way by assembling new teams of academics and practitioners and other kinds of experts to build a different way of going about and doing research.
Hmm. Very interesting. I think irrespective of anything, collaboration has been a big challenge, right? The platform that we run is a buyer-seller engagement platform. And forget about collaborating with the buyer. The fact that a marketing and a sales department can't collaborate in most organizations is something right. Which has been baffling people for decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I totally see where this is coming from. Right. So let's dive into the research that you did. Why did you sort of zero in on that, and what prompted you to do it, and what did you find?
Yeah. So the particular study that we were inspired by, I'll say, looked at creativity and whether it was possible for people to be creative online or whether they were more creative successfully when they were in person. And the study was conducted and the media, it was published and the media got a hold of it. And what the media published was Zoom kills creativity, right? So if you're running events and trade shows or anything like that, and you want them to inspire action and, you know, new business and all of the wonderful things that that we gather for, that was pretty darn alarming. Yeah. You know, if you do it online, it's going to die. Yeah. But when we looked at the study itself, what we found was that the way in which they measured creativity wasn't the way that we would measure creativity. They were explicitly counting the number of ideas students came up with in a 5-minute span. And then the way they invited that creativity was really boring. They just said, hey, everybody, you've got 5 minutes. Come up with as many creative uses for a Frisbee as you can. Go. Which is not the kind of creativity we're looking for in a business setting.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So as a meeting facilitator and designer and whatnot, you know, I would never invite people to become creative in that way. Neither would any of my colleagues across the industry. Hmm. So we decided, well, you know, maybe Zoom kills creativity, but it's not clear from that design, because that design sure kills creativity. So let's put together another experiment and see if we do things in the way that a really well-designed gathering would. What happens when we get people together in person, in hybrid settings, or online?
Right. And what did you find?
Well, we found a number of things that really quite surprised us. First of all, it was much, much harder to do recruiting than we would like. And that was a surprise. So, I mean, maybe before I share what we found, I should share a little bit about what we expected.
Sure, of course.
We kind of expected that the researchers were probably right. Right. Mm-hmm. That getting people back together in person really was truly better. Yeah. Especially coming off of COVID when we were all so starved for being around other people. We're like, you know, we're going to run this and we will probably just end up validating all of their expectations. Mm. We also expected to see a whole lot of creative variety. We expected international groups would come up with entirely different kinds of ideas and solutions than teams of people working domestically who'd been working together forever, right? Mm. So we had a couple of pretty strong expectations, but we pulled together the experiment, recruited facilitators, and hosted a whole bunch of different workshops. We ended up scheduling 30 90-minute workshops altogether. And then one of the first things we found was that we had to cancel 4 of them because we couldn't get anybody to show up.
Hmm.
And the ones we had to cancel were all in person.
Okay, that's interesting.
Well, you know, it is. It's, I mean, because even if we are excited about in-person events, if you can't get the bodies in the room, you can't achieve your goals.
True.
Right. So now these were shorter events, you know, a couple hours, not a couple of days. But we had the same experience when we tried to run a conference last year. And we had an online ticket, a hybrid online ticket, and then we had an in-the-room ticket. And we ended up having to cancel our in-the-room event because we couldn't get enough volume to, like, warrant the cost.
Hmm.
So that was an interesting and surprising finding.
Can I just interrupt you for a moment? So what kind of target audience were you trying to get into these meetings, especially the in-the-room? So I just want to understand whether it's the demographics which was actually impacting the choice of coming versus not coming.
Yeah, we were looking for team leaders, basically.
Okay.
So we're looking for business. It was a business buy. And it was a business buy targeted at people who were operating at the division to senior management level.
Right.
So the conference was all about how do we adapt teamwork given the rise of AI and all of the things that were happening at the time.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the kind of thing that would have fit within a business ticket.
Right.
You know, in terms of procurement, most of the time. And we had great tacos. Like, it was the best tacos of my life, that event. And we still couldn't get enough people. So tacos aside, that was one of our findings. Another thing that we found, so we expected, even if we for the ones that we did have, that the people who were in person were going to have a better experience and come out with more creative ideas.
Hmm.
We took all kinds of measurements. We measured demographics and age and whether the group knew each other and whether they had any expertise in the topic we were talking about, all kinds of things. And what we found when we compared the post and pre and post surveys between the different formats, in-person, hybrid, and all remote, was there were differences for two of the questions, which were, you know, how well did you like your meeting environment and how well do you feel like you got to participate? And in fact, people who were in the room together did rate those things higher.
Hmm.
But they rated them higher, like, in this tiny, tiny amount. It was, you know, like 0.04 percent difference. So very slightly higher ratings. Kind of noise, almost barely. And there were no meaningful differences across any of the other questions.
Yeah. So obviously now this whole thing is happening virtually. Most of the experiment that you're doing is now virtual. So it's not hybrid anymore.
Well, we did run hybrid experiments and we did run in-person experiments.
Also, okay.
Yeah, we did both. Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So the ones you had to cancel were all in-person, but you did have other in-person meetings as a
Exactly.
Okay, I misunderstood.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. We just didn't run as many in-person as we wanted to.
Okay. Okay. So was there any difference in the way people collaborated in person versus virtual?
You know, there were differences in terms of, you know, where they stood and some of the things that folks who do conversation analysis, so that when they look at the videos and they break everything down and they code it, there'll be some small differences that they can find there.
Mm-hmm.
Those differences weren't strong enough to have them rate the experience better in any of the different settings.
Got it.
Which I was really surprised by because, I mean, some of our in-person gatherings, you know, you could hear the room laugh, you know, you could watch them get snacks. They had fun stickers. Like I expected them to be rated much more positively than the online experiences, which are, you know, Zoom breakout rooms and things, right? But they weren't.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
I think our expectations have shifted. And I think I hadn't appropriately appreciated how much folks enjoy getting to gather and do something kind of fun and interesting that's also convenient. Right. And so online you had come to our experiment. It was kind of a fun experiment. They got to brainstorm and, you know, draw and, you know, make things up. And then they took some surveys. And it was easy because they just did it from wherever they already were.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode.
So the question that comes to my mind is, A, whether our ability to adapt to a virtual and map our expectation from a virtual vis-a-vis a physical has actually matured significantly because of COVID. That's one question that comes to my mind, right? So,
yeah.
So that's one. The other thing is it a possibility that when we are in a group face-to-face, the influence of what the others are rating and what the others are telling is much higher than when I'm in a Zoom breakout room. And thereby, I'm possibly downplaying what I'm feeling when I'm in person vis-a-vis when I'm in a virtual. I mean, would you have some sense of either of these two?
So I think on the first one, absolutely, right? I think our expectations have shifted. And I think I hadn't appropriately appreciated how much folks enjoy getting to gather and do something kind of fun and interesting that's also convenient.
Right.
Right. And so online you had come to our experiment. It was kind of a fun experiment. They got to brainstorm and, you know, draw and, you know, make things up. Right. And then they took some surveys and it was easy. Because they just did it from wherever they already were. In both settings, you know, the entire group can see everybody taking the survey together. Mm. So we had them in Zoom. They were all on gallery view and they could just see that everybody was typing. And
yeah.
And the same thing in the room. They were all on their phones. So I don't believe that social pressure to rate things one way or the other, given that the... Yeah, I mean, they were private, anonymized surveys that they were doing digitally.
Yeah.
So,
okay. To get a little more idea, so do you see, of course, your focus was creativity.
Uh-huh.
Focus was not collaboration, focus was not teamwork per se. It is about, are you creative in person more than virtually? So I guess that was the core of the research. But from the other work that you are doing, do you see any difference? Because there is this whole work from home and back to office debate going on, right?
Yeah.
So which is sort of connected to what we are doing here, right? So should we let them continue from home or should we get them back? Because we are actually losing out on productivity. And when I say productivity, it includes the creativity and includes the what you can do together as a team, right? So
right.
do you have any visibility on that?
Absolutely. And there are some great people to follow if you're still facing that return to office kind of question, who have some really fabulous insights on this. Hmm. But that was certainly one of the motivations in us tackling this survey, right? Because you get Stanford and Columbia coming out and saying Zoom kills creativity. Well, isn't that a wonderful thing for any executive who wants to mandate that everybody come back into the office?
Absolutely.
You know, look, science says, you know. So something that we found in our experiment that also aligns with some of the more advanced workplace research was that intentionality mattered most. Right. And by that, what I mean is that we haven't really talked about the creativity that we saw across the different events, different scenarios. And, you know, the short version is there was no difference. Right. There was no meaningful difference between how creative, and by creative, I mean the novelty and the usefulness of the ideas that people came up with, not the volume. There was a little bit of a difference in the number of ideas that they came up with, but in terms of whether they were actually creative ideas, there was no difference between in person, in the room, and hybrid. And that's kind of important, right? Because if your motivation for getting people back together is that when they're together, they can get a better business result. What we found was that when we were very clear about the business result we wanted people to create, and we laid out or facilitated a process that's designed to help them get that result, 100% of the teams got a result, which was also not something we expected. We expected like to throw these strangers together and say, hey, go. Our challenge was, you know, what should we do with all the empty office buildings in urban centers? And we expected some of them to get together and like come out at the end of their 10-minute, you know, design phase with not much to tell us. And that wasn't the case. Every single group of random people that we threw together had a name for their idea. They had some ideas about what it would look like. They were able to do a presentation. They had pictures, every single one of them. I was like, oh, so when we're very, very clear about what we're trying to do and how it could be done, people can succeed wherever they might be.
True. So one quick question on this one. Did you see a commonality amongst the ideas? the reason I ask this is because I also wonder whether this over-informed society that we live in is actually creating a, for the lack of a better term, a creative homogeneity.
Yes. Yeah, it was so boring, right? And so everybody succeeded when we were super clear, and everybody succeeded in creating things that looked awfully similar. So we ended up with 76 proposals out of these groups, and about 80% of them were all about multi-use community buildings, community centers, you know, housing for the homeless, you know, training areas where you could learn to do a restaurant, you know, like very, very similar communal good ideas. And that whole rise of the age of average, right? This whole, the universe has given us all the same information all the time, and therefore we all put out the same things.
Yeah.
Is very true, which I think reflects back on how important it is to be very intentional with how you frame your requests and your questions and the work.
Yes, I totally agree, because again, just to draw a parallel from the space that I work in, we are discussing quite often these days that how the KPIs used to measure output of sales professionals are actually completely useless.
Yeah.
So as a leader, if you're setting up these KPIs as your markers, you are literally setting up your team to fail.
Right.
And that's not what an individual salesperson on the ground can actually change, because then he has to get paid, he has a family to feed, and he'll say, okay, if I have to make calls, I'll make calls. If I have to knock doors, I'll knock doors, because that's what I'm getting paid for, right? We are not getting paid for results.
Yeah.
We are getting paid for activity. Anyway, I mean, I'm just saying that I totally see. And this is a, I mean, like most things, I mean, your point of being intentional about the process and clarity of output, I think mm-hmm. a lot of systemic problems that we see is because of the failure of the leadership to be in touch with reality.
I hear you. Right. So, you know, you had asked about like, what are the implications here for like the whether we should bring people back together in the office yeah. and whatnot. Our work and my experience certainly shows me that if you can be really spot on and very clear with how you are articulating the desired results, right? We're trying to innovate in this way, or we're trying to achieve this, or we're trying to grow revenue, or whatever that might be. Yeah. And that if you can continue to refine and adapt and improve how people go about it, you can succeed anywhere, you know, assuming it's knowledge work, not, yeah. you know, we're building physical products. So let's yeah. just, which I hate to be dismissive of, because that's 60% of our workforce here in the US, like they yeah. do things in the real world. That said, as you just mentioned, leaders are terrible about being very clear and very intentional.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So if you have no clue what that team is meant to do, then it is up to that team to figure it out. Mm. And that the research, not ours, but from other areas, shows that when there is a whole lot of uncertainty and I don't know you well, then it is really beneficial to get the group together in person to figure out how they're going to work together. That said, you really need to do it about once every 3 to 4 months. For maybe a day. And they can create the sort of relationships that then allow them to work successfully together asynchronously and online. Yeah. And that I know who you are and what you like and whatnot thing carries across.
Yeah.
There's this cool curve. It like, you know, I've got this huge bump of, hey, I love everybody because we're all friends now. And then it fades out. So you got to get them back together. You can do that online 100%, but you have to be much more intentional
yeah.
to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because like all experiments, this had constraints. And when I said, when I spoke about the homogeneity of ideas, I think I do believe that if you had given them a week instead of 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
There would have been much more definitive ideas coming out, which were not look-alike.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, the constraint is a constraint.
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think this is great. I think this is a great conversation. Would you like to cover anything else that you found at a high level that you'd like to share? Because I'm sure I'm doing a very bad job of asking questions.
No, you do. It's wonderful. You know, no, I think you're correct though. I mean, I guess there was one other key finding we found.
Hmm.
A key finding we found. Of course we did. Key thing that we discovered. Hmm. And it's that when you want to increase creativity and performance rapidly, there is this sort of underlying belief that, you know, we'll get the best ideas when we get the most diverse set of perspectives in the room, right? Like, wouldn't it be great if we get people who are from all kinds of different industries and ages and races and all of these things, and then we'll get the most creative ideas. What we found in practice was that we got better creativity, more novelty, when the small team that was put together had a similar perspective. And here's why. You focus on trade shows and sales. I focus on business meetings and teams and collaboration. For you and I to work together and find a creative solution to something, we have to spend some amount of time sort of trying to figure out, what do you know? What do I know? Do we use the words the same way? Right? Whereas if we were both part of the same industry and focused on the same things, we assume all of that and we start from there and then we go up in terms of our creativity. Hmm. So yeah. I think the implication in terms of unleashing diverse perspectives might be to do multiple rounds. So on the first round, get together people who already have a shared base, right? And use those common experiences to get really great creative ideas. And then with those first draft creative ideas out there, mix it up.
Right?
Hmm. Bring the rich perspectives from other groups. So if I were going to apply that to like planning a trade show, for example, I might have all of the salespeople talk about what they wanted it to be, and all of the speakers talk about what they wanted it to be, and all the vendors, right? And then get them to talk to each other.
So the groups need to find their common base before they can start accepting ideas which are alien, so to say.
Yes.
Or outside their zone of expertise.
Right.
And it also takes away the obvious problematic ideas, because the group itself will reject it and would filter it, so to say, to come up with the most plausible thing from their perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Makes complete sense.
Well, and that's exactly what we saw, right? So if you get a group of three and they're an international group with all kinds of different experiences, this person's really cool, weird, out there idea was, people over here would say, oh, well, that's fascinating, but we could also do housing. And everybody's like, yeah, I guess housing's fine. <You know? laughs> And it became exactly what you were talking about before, right?
Yeah.
That internet law of averages, because we just kind of go to the whatever safest.
Yeah.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit TradeshowEngage.com. That is TradeshowEngage.com.
Great. Elise, this was wonderful. Thank you for coming and speaking with me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
This is, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is in a way, for me, it is a way to slightly push ideas and agendas into the comfort zone of people who I talk to normally.
Yeah.
Right? So this is exactly what I was trying to do when I saw about your research and I reached out and I wanted to talk about it. Because this is not something I'll do if I'm talking to a veteran trade show professional. We have too many other things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, we can keep this aside. I mean, we have this burning ROI issue that we need to talk about, burning training issue that we need to talk about, and so on. I mean, where is the space for creativity and collaboration and hybrid and non-hybrid?
Right. All of the things that apply to all of the people trying to run trade shows and then impact what all your attendees expect when they show up.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'll be in touch and we will talk more. I'm very interested in what you work with. New rules of work, because work itself is going through significant change in definition. There is so much to talk about there.
I agree. Thank you for having me, and I hope this all goes well for you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for Pitchlink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.